Contracts, salary caps. Why do our favorite teams make some of the moves they do? It's usually the money. It's time for the Business of Sports with Andrew Brandt.
Hey there, boys and girls. Welcome to another edition of the Business of Sports with Andrew Brandt. Got a special guest. It's the CEO of SeatGeek. They're changing the way we buy tickets. They're taking on Ticketmaster. They are disruptors in the field. His name is Jack Retzinger. He's a young guy. You'll hear all about him. He's a disruptor. I like him. He's algorithm-based, numbers-based, data-based. What they're doing at SeatGeek is really special. This episode is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. This is something where you're going to find the right candidates, not through job boards, but through LinkedIn. You'll find the person who'll help you grow your business at LinkedIn. People go there every day, as you know, grow professionally and look for job opportunities. Now, 9 out of 10 members on LinkedIn, they're not going to job boards, but they are open to new opportunities, and you can reach them only on LinkedIn. That's why a new hire is made every 10 seconds on LinkedIn, and businesses rate LinkedIn 40% higher than job boards at getting them the right and the quality candidates. So that's the way to find jobs. Go to LinkedIn. Hurry to LinkedIn.com/BOS. That's Business of Sports. It's BOS, all caps, BOS. Get $50 off your first job post. That's LinkedIn.com/BOS. Get $50 off your first job post. Again, LinkedIn.com/BOS, all caps. Terms and conditions apply. Go to LinkedIn, the right way to find the quality candidates for your jobs. Jack, welcome to the Business of Sports podcast.
Thanks, Andrew. Great to be here.
Great to have you, and really impressed with what you've done so far. I want to sort of take us up there. You're a young guy, and I think a lot of people want to know how you got to where you are. So, giving you a blank canvas, sort of take us up from the past to where you are now before we get into the nitty-gritty of SeatGeek.
Yeah, so I went to Dartmouth College with one of my co-founders, Russ, and to us, you know, we're good friends. We're both living in Boston after we graduated kind of fooling around with different ideas for tech startups. Both of us were programmers. And this is around the time when all of the Boston sports teams were just winning everything. I think they won 3 of the 4 major titles that year. So we were, you know, as big sports fans and people who enjoy making money on the internet, we were really just for fun brokering and buying and selling a few sports tickets, and thought we were geniuses because we were making money when in fact it was just that the prices for everything was going up because of the Boston success. But we did get really familiar with the market, particularly the secondary ticket market, through that. And honestly, we're just blown away by a few things, you know, by the inefficiency and lack of transparency, by the bad user experiences kind of being thrust upon folks. And as people who, you know, enjoy building things on the internet, we figured, you know, maybe we can do a little bit better than this.
And so where did that idea come from, and what was kind of the inflection point of making SeatGeek happen?
So initially we were very focused on data, and specifically just making the process more transparent, because, you know, it's still something our industry suffers from. People often don't know exactly what they're paying, and they don't often know exactly what they're getting either, you know. So we spent a lot of time building analytics to just help people understand this is what you're paying, and this is either a good deal or it's a bad deal. So that you could hopefully, you know, leave the process of buying a ticket to a game or a show feeling like you didn't just get ripped off.
So tell us, I mean, we all hear the word aggregates, and I think that's what SeatGeek does. It aggregates tickets from around the web, from sports to concerts to theater, to find the best process. I'm sorry, the best prices and the seats available. That's the general understanding. Is there something deeper you can tell us about how that works?
Yeah, you know, we actually don't think of ourselves as an aggregator as much as just a marketplace where there's, you know, thousands of sellers all listing on SeatGeek. There's thousands of buyers. And it gets a little bit semantic, but, you know, aggregator would often imply that you're sort of being kicked off to buy elsewhere. When in fact, part of the beauty of SeatGeek is that you don't have to go elsewhere, and it's incredibly dead simple, easy to just buy the tickets, just sort of identify the very few best deals where you're going to get the best bang for your buck, and with a few taps, have that ticket on your phone. And the really interesting thing that we've seen is that ease makes it possible to make much more spontaneous last-minute decisions. So whereas, you know, a decade ago, you maybe needed to plan, you know, 6 months in advance to go see a game, you can now make that decision the day of and still get a great deal and, you know, get in with the SeatGeek app.
And you and Russ had this idea, and obviously it sounds like a great idea, a lot of disruption in the marketplace. How about the funding? Where'd that come from? How did you grow over the years?
Yeah, so we've raised about $165, $170 million up to this point. But honestly, you know, never, I see funding as a means to an end, not the end. And early on, we're very resistant to raising more than we had to. So we, you know, for our first really 4 or 5 years, only raised a few million bucks. We're very lean. We had a very early mobile app in the App Store. And it was really traction around that inspired us to get, you know, more aggressive with raising funding, because we had this dynamic where it just felt like we had, you know, far away the best product in the App Store. We were able to buy, you know, sort of acquire users via paid acquisition and wanted to be able to do it faster. And at that point, we're limited by how much money we'd raise, so we raised a bit more.
And is this, obviously, you start with family and friends. Have you gone Silicon Valley route? How has the funding been happening?
Yes, yeah, so we started off with by raising money from a few angels. We then raised money from a really outstanding early stage fund called Founder Collective, which is based in Boston. Mm-hmm. And then more recently have raised rounds from some of the best in Silicon Valley. So that's a fund called Excel, Technology Crossover Ventures, and Glean Capital have led our last few rounds.
So as we move to the present, you got a lot going on. I saw recently a partnership with Snapchat, and to me that looked like an obvious tie-in. It seems like something we're going to see more in the industry, open ticketing and just using partners like that to get the word out. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the Snapchat partnership is part of a really much broader and important line of business for us, which is our enterprise business. Mm-hmm. So I was talking earlier about SeatGeek, SeatGeek's consumer experience, but around 2 years ago at this point, we decided to make the leap to launching what we call SeatGeek Enterprise, which is a you know, basically set of different pieces of software that are offered to teams and venues to do all of the primary ticketing for their venue. And it does it in sort of a foundationally different way than legacy primary ticketing companies, with the big difference being openness. So, you know, whereas with a legacy ticketer, you might only be able to sell through that legacy ticketer's website, we're big believers that a team or venue should be able to sell sell tickets across the whole internet, you know, wherever they want. And it ultimately really should be up to them. And that enables integrations like the Snapchat deal that you mentioned, where, you know, for LAFC, new you know, really outstanding MLS team in LA, they were able to sell tickets to their fans on Snapchat in a way that they wouldn't be able to do with a legacy ticketing company that is embracing kind of a channel exclusive model.
How's that? How were they able to do that?
Well, so it's fundamentally just a different business model. So whereas the old model is centered around piping tickets to a single website, we use a set of APIs that any third-party distribution outlet, you know, can use to ultimately tap into and sell tickets. It takes the consent of the team. So obviously, you know, there were a distribution partner that a team didn't work with. It's not like they can sell tickets to the team. But as long as the team can move through tickets through, you know, any given website, any given app, SeatGeek Open, just the name of our enterprise product, is there to support it.
And is the marketplace open to you with the leagues? You talked about LAFC. I know you have deals with the Cowboys and the Saints and the Pelicans. I think a lot of people don't know about whether this is something you can pick off teams individually. You have to go through leagues. Talk about your business acquisition model in terms of how you get to these teams.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I would say for the most part, you know, in the United States, it's still ultimately a team decision. So it's us, you know, building relationships with individual teams, mutually agreeing to, you know, for SeatGeek Enterprise to be their ticketing platform and then moving them over. With that said, you know, leagues will have different structures that will make it, will streamline things further for teams. So for us, We're really stoked to be official partners of two leagues, which are the NFL and Major League Soccer. With the NFL, we're one of three ticketing partners they have as part of their kind of new approach to more open ticketing. And with Major League Soccer, we're the single official ticketing platform of the league.
So on the NFL model, they have three companies, as you mentioned, you're one of them, and the teams are free to do individual deals with any of the three or even someone outside the three?
So the way that works is the league has sort of chosen multiple parties to be distribution partners. In the case of the NFL, it's currently ourselves, SeatGeek, and then also StubHub and Ticketmaster. Mm-hmm. And all of those official league partners then have the ability to reissue and verify tickets through the primary platform of each individual team. And there's also sort of an opportunity for those distribution partners to get an allocation of primary tickets from the team when they're available and sell them directly to fans.
I see.
So, broadly, stepping back a little bit, we see it as interesting because, when we launched SeatGeek Open a few years ago, the sort of notion of open ticketing was pretty brand new and a little bit uncomfortable in the ticketing industry. And over the last 2 years, we've seen really incredible momentum with more and more teams and now leagues embracing that, kind of culminating with the NFL making a big shift, a big departure from how they've done things in the past. And I think took a lot of, really courage and creativity on behalf of leaders at the NFL.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think most people listening sort of think the traditional model, Ticketmaster, deal one deal, that's how you get your tickets. And now we're seeing this, I don't know if it's the right word, but this disruption in the marketplace, first with StubHub and now with you guys, in terms of more open source. And it's all better for the consumer, right? I mean, this is all about making it, as you said, as consumer friendly as possible and to make the user experience much more friendly.
Yep. I think it's that you just nailed it. I mean, what gets kind of lost is if you just have a single outlet that is sort of exclusively allowed to sell tickets for a team, that outlet loses all of the incentive they have to build a world-class user experience, right? It's sort of the opposite of a competitive marketplace. Mm-hmm. Instead, that outlet knows that, basically whatever they put in front of a fan, the fan has to accept. So that can manifest itself in different ways. It can mean that fans have, confusing experiences on a website. It could mean that, a mobile app doesn't work. It could mean that a fan gets hit with 60% fees because, they don't have a choice. So the beauty of sort of the more open model is that it creates this competitive ecosystem where all of a sudden different companies are trying to be innovative and compete for the attention of fans and the kind of the ability to sell. And if you come up with a really clever or easy way to do that, then, fans win and the team wins as well because they're able to move more tickets.
Yeah, and I think that we brought up earlier this sort of this example we have with Snapchat now. This seems like a win-win where fans are discovering more events they wouldn't have known about before. Teams are able to sell more tickets. It's just kind of another delivery model to get it out there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just sort of, waking up to the reality that fans for a team can live and exist online in a lot of different places.
Yeah.
And if you can bring stuff right in front of them, it can be really powerful.
Yeah, and segueing right where my next question was, mobile. I mean, it seems like the wave of the future obviously is mobile. We have younger viewers in all sports. Everything's trending younger. League's biggest challenge right now, it's not concussions. It's not kneeling for the anthem. The real challenge for every sports league is this: how to attract and maintain younger viewers. And I think you are tapping into something that's a key to that, which is mobile. Just the way I see SeatGeek, it's mobile first, and you see the future as mobile, don't you?
Yeah. There's a few components of that. I mean, one is obviously just that younger audiences are, far more likely to be buying things on their phone than they are on a laptop. But even more fundamentally is the fact that on mobile, you can just do things that weren't possible before, right? So, when you're living in a world where you're buying something on a laptop and then a ticket gets shipped to you, you're sort of, it's almost just an inherent assumption in that world that you're buying pretty far in advance, right? You can't make the sort of spontaneous last minute purchase because it doesn't work pragmatically. Whereas in a mobile world, when, you know, you can be walking past a venue and get a push notification saying there's, you know, $30 Nets tickets at you know, in the second row, and with a few taps, have those tickets instantly show up on your phone and scan in, you know, all of a sudden you have these use cases that just didn't exist before.
Right.
So, you know, that gets me excited because it means that we're not just, like, taking share from other companies by growing. We're growing by actually enabling more people to do things live that they just weren't able to do before. So it's not all about just hand-to-hand combat and, you know, SeatGeek getting users from Company X. It's about all these fans doing stuff that, you know, instead they would have been just sitting home and doing nothing.
I also saw you made some entry in the NBA as well with the New Orleans Pelicans. Is that right? Is that part of that Saints deal? I know they're owned by the same outlet.
Yeah, we're working with both those teams. We're actually just going live with them now. So very excited to be working with the Pelicans next year and also the Saints.
And then you've got a Premier League deal starting next year. Is that right as well?
Yeah, so just, you know, we've actually had really good luck with the English Premier League. So at this point, we have a quarter of the EPL teams signed up on SeatGeek. Most recently, we announced Manchester City, which we're, you know, really thrilled about. We'll be going live with them very soon.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like you're gaining some momentum in the industry. And I just go back to the point I made earlier, the point you made, where I sort of said a ticketing company, you said a data company. So can you expound on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, we've actually had an internal kind of cultural slogan here where, you know, we consider ourselves to be a technology company, not a ticketing company. And by that, I mean, like, ultimately, we are focused on building great technology, you know, using software, using data to enable teams to, you know, run their businesses better, to enable fans to go do more stuff. As opposed to be a company that sort of, you know, inherently decided in the ticket industry and then it's just going to, you know, deal with whatever technology they have to, but not really see that as an enabling force. You know, ultimately, SeatGeek is going to live or die by the software we build, the platform we build, and whether or not it's the best out there and empowers, you know, more and more teams and fans. And we've got everyone here very oriented around that.
I'm getting a little personal with you now. I try to do this with all my guests because you're a young guy. You've got a lot of success going with the company. And you're making the headroads. How's your sleep? How's your exercise? What are your routines?
It's funny because I've been trying to get better at that recently. I used to be pretty bad, actually. I used to sleep probably 4 or 5 hours a night. Yeah. Recently, I think I've got it up to a solid 6 or so on average. I've actually started tracking it every day just to make sure I'm.
What's your tracker?
I just use a spreadsheet. Actually, I just use Google Sheets.
Okay.
It's not very sophisticated, but
okay.
I'm in Google Sheets all day anyway, so it's easy to just tag on one more thing.
And what's your exercise routine?
So actually, gotten into playing squash here in New York, which is not something I played growing up. But it's just a killer way to get, you know, very sort of like focused 45 minutes of exercise where you play your ass off. But you don't really realize you're doing it because it's competitive. And then you're done. So I do that, 2 or 3 days a week, before work.
Any books you're reading right now?
Good question. I'm actually a little bit random, but, reading a book called Powerful, which is by a woman named Patty McCord, who was kind of like the HR pioneer at Netflix. Netflix has like a very distinctive around HR, where they, you know, HR is sort of a field that historically has been a little bit staid and set in its ways.
Right.
And Netflix has done a ton of interesting stuff to turn a lot of that on its head. And it's a book that kind of like, you know, gives a little bit of insight into that, how and why they did that. So I'd actually really recommend it.
I also saw somewhere I read about you where you and I share a, sort of an app that we can't live without, which is Headspace, which is a meditation app. Yeah, this guy Andy's voice is just so soothing. So are you? You're a big meditator every day.
Yeah, I try to do it literally every day before work. And I've actually, I hate to be cheating on Andy, but I moved on to a new app called 10% Happier.
Oh yeah, with Dan Harris. I listen to the podcast. Sure.
Yeah, it's good. He's good because he adds a little bit of humor and sort of, I don't know, the tagline is something like meditation for fidgety skeptics. And I would kind of put myself in like the fidgety skeptic class of like, I know I want to do this, but I also am not, it's not like I was, you know, came out of the womb a natural meditator. So it's a good way to kind of convince myself that it's worth it.
Yeah. Speaking of other podcasts.
You're a big fan as well?
Yeah, I'm a big meditator. I mean, I got into Headspace and I probably should, you know, I'm that fidgety skeptic as well. It's hard to stay in it. But Dan Harris has also taught me that coming out of it is actually part of the thing. So
exactly.
You're doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing. Yeah, it's the whole point, which is really important to me to sort of get centered. I'm trying to take it up from 10 to 12 to 15 minutes, but that keeps getting put off.
Baby steps.
How about this? If you could tell your, pick a number, 20-year-old self one thing, what would that be?
Oh, man, that's a good question. You know what? I think I'm a huge believer in the sort of power of programming and being able to program when you want to build a technology company. So I'd always wanted to do a startup, and I've done a few now with my friend Russ, who I mentioned before. And, you know, going into it, I was an okay programmer, but I wish that earlier on I'd invested even more time in just becoming an outstanding technologist, because I think it ultimately makes you just better at creating a technology company.
And last question, this is kind of, speaking of other podcasts, the Tim Ferriss question. If you had a billboard that go out to hundreds, thousands, millions of people, what would you put on that?
Oh, man. Well, obviously, it has to be a SeatGeek, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's your business one. How about your personal one?
Personal one, huh? You know, I think I'm trying to think like what the...
kind of a defining principle kind of your life.
Yeah, right? I think, you know, to go off the thread we were just talking about, I've actually found meditation to be incredibly enabling, kind of powerful, positive part of my life. So if you're able to compel more people to do that, I get really into kind of like the research side of psychology and research into human happiness and what sort of reliably makes people happier. And it's interesting how so many things that we all think, you know, make us happier, whether that be wealth or, you know, having a big house, don't have a statistically significant impact. And yet, something as simple as meditation does. So I think if you can compel more people to do that on a billboard or otherwise, then it's a great thing.
I agree on that one. Jack Retzinger, CEO, co-founder of SeatGeek, which is certainly taking on Ticketmaster and disrupting the industry. Been great to have you on the Business of Sports podcast. Thanks for being with me.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. This was fun.
Hope you enjoyed listening to Jack Retzinger, CEO of SeatGeek, talking about taking on Ticketmaster, all the things they're doing. Interesting guy in himself. I got in to ask him some personal questions, too. I like seeing how young people are successful and sort of rise above the pack, as he has. Hope you enjoyed this episode. As all episodes of the Business of Sports podcast, you can hear it on iTunes. Give us a good rating if you would. Tune in, Stitcher, RossTucker.com, wherever you hear your podcasts. Follow me on Twitter at Andrew Brandt, and I'll be back next week with another edition of the Business of Sports with Andrew Brandt.
Thanks for listening to the Business of Sports with Andrew Brandt. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast so you never miss an episode. You can also get additional insider insight by listening to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Fantasy Feast, Even Money, and College Draft Podcast, all at RossTucker.com or wherever podcasts are found.